It's Rocanto with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence, as we always are. And coming up this hour, I got your Billy Joel tickets. You want to go see Billy Joel at the Wrigley Field in August? You can do it. Tickets will go on sale till Saturday. And yet, I have in my hot little hand, I've got tickets to go see that. And it is a great show, and it is Wrigley Field, and it's idyllic or something like that, as far as we can tell. All right, Kim Fox has just entered the studio. You've heard her name batted around here for the last couple of weeks. Kim Fox is a woman who wants the... And I don't understand this, Kim. I'll just be really honest with you. You want the thankless job of being the Cook County State's Attorney. And you... And this is a very interesting thing, though. I think, you know, politically, John Cass... wrote an article about this, and he sat down with John Cass, actually. He went to lunch with John Cass.
Breakfast.
Well,
I bet it was good breakfast, because he knows where to eat, that guy.
We went to Wishbone, and he had catfish and grits, which he'd never had before for breakfast.
How did he like that?
You know, he bantied it about, do you really eat catfish for breakfast? Do you really eat catfish? It's like, just eat it. he cleaned his plate, so I imagine.
Very good.
I've had their shrimp and grits, also very good.
Yeah. Does he put his cigarette out in the grits? I mean, that's sort of the old, that's like an old school way of doing stuff, isn't it?
I bet he does.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not why we called.
No.
So you got slated by the regular Democrats, by the Democratic Party Central Committee, and against the incumbent. That is a pretty rare thing to have happen, right?
Absolutely.
In Cook County.
Absolutely.
And what do you think that was about? What do you think they were looking for?
Well, I mean, we went to slating back in August, and the two-term incumbent wasn't slated back then, which was rare in and of itself. They'd voted in August to keep it open, despite the fact that the state's attorney was there for two terms. So I think after the events of Laquan McDonald and the subsequent, you know, videos and the email dumps and everything that was happening in Chicago, Cook County was on an international stage around, the embarrassment of what was happening here. I think the parties decided that they could no longer sit on the sideline, that they had to take a stake in this race. And I made my credentials known once again and was able to convince the party that this is the route that they should take.
Because you'd been in the state's attorney's office,
yes,
right, before. You're now the chief of staff to the president of the board.
Not anymore. So I...
Well, we're up until were. You've made this turn now toward the election. And this is an interesting thing because... there's so much debate, and, you know, we have lawyers on the show all the time. I always have a flying wedge of lawyers with me at any given moment just in case something happens.
Yeah, you like to have them around.
I like to have them around. Lawyers are always a good thing to have. Lawyers and doctors are two things to always have around. Maybe a good plumber, too. And so what you need to understand, if you're from out of Chicago and you're watching this, as you're pointing out, Kim, on TV, on CNN or whatever, you're watching the protests, and Rahm Emanuel still, you know, yesterday on CNN they were talking about how, you know, people are even today Black Lives Matter protester, you know, interrupting him when he's on the road,
conference of mayors, right?
Yeah. So this is an interesting situation. It's an interesting moment in Chicago. What would you, if you were state's attorney back in the days and weeks after the Laquan McDonald shooting, what would you have done differently, do you think, than what Anita has done?
Certainly. I mean, I think she did the right things initially. I think bringing in the FBI, bringing in the U.S. Attorney's Office to assist because of the egregious nature of what happened, and because you need, with the FBI, someone else outside of the Chicago Police Department reviewing what happened with the Chicago Police Department. Mm-hmm. I think where she made her error was she held on to the case once she decided that she was going to charge it. The whole, I wanted to do a press conference with the feds for their charges, which had nothing to do with the charge of murder. She did not need...
It'll be a civil rights charge.
Yeah, it's a civil rights charge that they can do at any point. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I think she was able to conclude her case in the murder charge far sooner than when she announced the charges. And so I think being able to have outside eyes help her build the case was the right thing to do. I think she should have executed on that far sooner than she did.
Would you charge first degree murder?
I would have charged first degree murder based on the evidence that I've seen this.
Yeah, because there is a legal argument. I mean, I've heard lawyers debating this about whether or not they're going to be able to get a first degree conviction. And if there's not a first degree conviction, does that sort of overpromise and underdeliver to people who are looking for justice?
Well, I mean, I think after the Dante Cervin ruling in which the officer was charged with the reckless as opposed to having been charged with murder, with the first degree, you have the lesser includeds that are there. Mm-hmm. So even if you overpromise, you still may be able to deliver something. Uh-huh. With Dante Cervin, it was you charged a crime that the judge said this should have been something else, but mm-hmm. you can't charge the something else. And so he was able to not be found guilty of anything. So I think first degree murder encompasses a number of findings that a judge or jury can make where you can feel comfortable that justice can be served with the broad charge.
You know, you've been a victim of crime. Yes. I was reading you obviously witnessed crime. You grew up in Cabrini Green housing projects, and your remarkable story, the education, and where you've brought yourself in life. I wonder if I think one of the biggest issues facing us right now is trust. People right. have lost trust in the system in a large respect. And how do you possibly restore that? I mean, is that's what you'd be burdened with in this office?
Absolutely. I think the role of the prosecutor is to seek justice for everybody. And the communities that need, you know, strong law enforcement relationships to have that trust are the ones with the highest levels of violence. And they're the ones that have the least amount of trust in the system. I mean, they don't trust it. So when we talk about the, you know, no snitching policies, the silence in the communities, when you have a breakdown of trust like this on the law enforcement side, you've got a real challenge. We're not going to be able to address the violence issues because why would they come talk to us? And I think the first thing that you have to do is acknowledge that it's broken. You have to acknowledge that the trust has been breached. And I think the current state's attorney is not even acknowledging that the delay in the charges have broken that trust.
Mm. And I think, you know, they watch Law and Order, and so they figure that this is how they know how the system works, you know, between the lawyers and the cops and mm-hmm. the whole deal. And in Cook County, it has always been a different, sometimes backflow system, sometimes flexible. I'm using terms that don't describe anything because, quite honestly, it's almost indescribable at times, right? Mm-hmm. The relationship, it depends on the police officers who are involved in the incident specifically, on their captains and their commanders and their, you know, their sergeants and their captain commanders. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go on in this. And would you say, Kim, as somebody grew up in Chicago, as we mentioned, grew up mm-hmm. in Cabrini Green, saw all of the kinds of things that one can see in that very, very troubled couple of acres of mm-hmm. Chicago. Do you think that there is, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you like to see happen here to repair that relationship between the police and the community, let alone the state's attorney's office? We're going to get to that in a second.
I think there has to be real partnership. I think the police and the community have to meet each other where they are. I think it's this kind of top-down approach or, you know, a couple people are trained on this community policing initiative, but if they're not bought into it, it's not there. Mm-hmm. And I think we've drifted away from people who knew who their police officers were, you know, and the police officers knew who the knuckleheads were and who the criminals were. We've gone away from that.
That's a technical term. I'm
yeah,
very
you
glad.
You use that. That is one of you just stole that from Rokon.
No. I stole that from every former state's attorney I ever knew in my life.
Knuckleheads.
Right?
I love
knucklehead.
That.
That's a term of art.
It's a term. It's like a knucklehead or a criminal.
Right.
And there are probably way more knuckleheads than there are criminals
right.
around. But we've
But a knucklehead can become a
same.
Criminal.
Exactly.
Criminal is already a criminal.
Right.
A knucklehead can be saved.
A knucklehead does the things that, you know, hey, man, you know, you shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And without an intervention can continue down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't have police officers who can tell the difference and who are willing to save those who can be saved by maybe it's a diversion, maybe it's talking to him, maybe it's taking him to his parents and not kind of this reflexive everybody get on the ground
well,
because I can't distinguish knuckleheads from criminals.
That is such an excellent point
it
because
is.
We have a problem now.
We do.
Because they've just changed there's a standing order now that they don't have contact cards anymore. The police don't.
No.
So when the police actually encounter a civilian on the street as opposed to, you know, filling out a contact card. And I met knucklehead number one, right? And you know, it was we were jawing at each other.
Right. But here's the address.
But here's who he is, and this is what it is. Right. We'll watch him. He's a knucklehead. Not a criminal. He's a knucklehead. Yes. I mean, I'm making them incredibly simple. But now they have to essentially fill out a police report, and they formalize the encounter in a way. And I get where the bad things happened that resulted in this, but isn't that the kind of thing that's going to get in the way of that sort of, no. you know, that wink and nod and you know, stern talk that cops sometimes have to young kids that right. do turn them?
Formalizing, institutionalizing relationships mm-hmm. is not a relationship, right? It's you're processing what should be like natural contact with one another. And I understand, you know, that we've evolved to this place of needing to document so that right. we can make sure that we're being consistent.
Well, $500 million we spent paying families out, right?
In 10 years.
Yeah. $500 million. That's just for the city of Chicago.
Right.
That's just for the city of Chicago. And so, I mean, we have to do better. We know that. But again, I think we're on these archaic notions of what it means to be in communities that people aren't from. And I think the work that they're doing with CPD to make sure that they diversify their ranks, that they have more African Americans
right
and
now,
Latinos.
Though? Yeah, to get African Americans, Latinos. Asians at the other significant population we're not talking about are Muslims.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's hard to get into the hearts and minds of those kids, you know, whether and you need a college education to right. become a Chicago police officer now to get to those 21 and 22 year old kids and say, hey, let's get on the list, take the test, let's see where we can get,
yeah.
you know,
and you got to start early. I mean, I remember when I was coming up, I knew a number of my friends who I grew up with who wanted to be police officers because back in the day, Officer Friendly would come to mm-hmm. the school and mm-hmm. talk to you, and you had the shiny badge and the uniform, and kind of you were conditioned that the police were there to help you. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's really this whole episode or episodes for decades have really been not only demoralizing for the city, but even for the good police officers who get into it for the right reasons. And to go from hero status, where kids want to be police officers, to really struggling to find people to come in because of the actions of, you know, a few tainting the many, is really disheartening.
Kim Fox wants to be your next state's attorney in Cook County. We'll come back and talk to Kim a little bit more about that. But first, let's check. Kim Fox wants to be your next state's attorney in the county of Cook, and the Democratic Party said, yeah, well, we'll go with her, because mm-hmm. they did not want to go with Anita Alvarez after, I guess, you know, as you know, Kim, you've been around this on both sides of the, you know, whether you're, you know, working as a prosecutor or being in politics, you know, people go radioactive. And when they go radioactive, everybody tries, you know, the parties try to get away. Somehow Trump has remained somehow not radioactive. He's like Mothra or something. He's come out of the
Teflon.
Sea. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the monster. They go, there's not, that's fine. He's yeah. fine.
No.
Anyway, the point is that, you know, that's an incredible endorsement, and it's going to give you a lot of street and operational help, I would imagine. You
absolutely.
Know, sort of feet on the ground there. But what can you do as state's attorney? What can a state's attorney do, or would you do, to build a trust between the system? Now, it's not so much about the people. It's the systems within the state's attorney's office. It's fairly political. And there's, you know, like any large bureaucracy, there's a lot of grousing that goes on. Yeah. And the relationship between specifically the Chicago Police Department, forget about all the suburban police departments, but just for the moment, and that's very complicating, but the Chicago Police Department and the state's attorney, in terms of getting that felony review process and the process of charging, of approving charges and stuff like that, where the two sides now are at total loggerheads with each other.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is they need each other. So when you talk about felony review, just so your listeners know, anytime someone is charged with a crime in the mm-hmm. city of Chicago or the suburbs, we'll talk about the city, you know, the police arrest the prosecutor, the state's attorney charges. And so, you know, if you're going to be charged with a felony, the police bring the defendant and the evidence and the facts to the state's attorney to review. And then the state's attorney looks at the facts, looks at the law, says, do we have enough evidence to substantiate charges and charges? And so the relationship between the state's attorney and the police has to be, it's interdependent. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's,
right.
you don't.
There's sort of one, it's one mechanism at that point.
It's one mechanism. It's very, it's an intimate relationship because you depend on the police to bring the evidence for you to be able to charge.
And but you're hearing stories of that breaking down, and that's the moment. That's it. That's, I mean, if you don't get the proper relationship between the police who are bringing the evidence and the state's attorneys who are going to decide to charge or not to charge, because state's attorneys are getting cold feet on cases because they're not sure what they can trust. Cops are thinking, why aren't you trusting me? I'm a good one, which is, you know, the vast majority of cops who are, you know, doing their jobs.
But I think the problem becomes when you don't deal with misconduct when it happens. And mm-hmm. then we have a bubbling up of cases, and we see story after story, and the public wants accountability and you haven't done it. And then all of a sudden, everyone wants to, like, go after the bad guys. And again, it gets all convoluted. And the relationship, we just should acknowledge, it's an intimate relationship where there's a conflict of interest mm-hmm. if you're trying to prosecute one of your own, right?
Do you think the Chicago Police Department should go inside or outside for their next superintendent?
I think it's tricky. I mean, honestly, I think the police officers on the ground here will say they need somebody who knows mm-hmm. Chicago. I think part of what people will complain about the last couple is they don't know our streets. They don't know our neighborhoods. Right. They don't know our dynamic. And that's why we get what we get. Mm-hmm. But the question also becomes, when it's so much scrutiny and there's so much that's happened, how do you find someone from within to reestablish credibility when basically the department has been under this broad public indictment? Mm-hmm. So it's tricky. I mean, because I do believe we need someone. I think one of the biggest complaints about what's happened in the last several years is that we've had so many people who are trying to bring, like, New York, I hate to sound Republican, New York values. Mm-hmm.
Oh, very Trumpian of you.
Very Ted Cruz.
I know what you mean by that.
That's a dog whistle. She means liberal Jewish pornographers. That's what she means.
I know. But you're bringing people from the outside who don't understand the complexities of uh-huh. what, you know, yeah. the South Side and the West Side are two very different
uh-huh.
places. And yeah. you can't police the South Side and the West Side in the same way. You can't police some blocks.
Or the North Side. North Side is a very different, it's a different animal.
Different Uptown versus Lincoln Park, sure. you know, versus Rogers yeah. Park. I mean, right. it's so complicated. It and is. When you have someone coming in with, you know, kind of an academic perspective as opposed to an on the ground street perspective.
Although the stats tough. Thing I thought was good. I think
Comstats
is a very good idea, which is what one of the things that Gary McCarthy was developing, you know, robustly here in the Chicago Police Department. Because, you know, you want to be predictive, and
data,
there's technology now.
We have yeah. the use of data. I mean, I think this. It's one of those things when you talk about in Cook County, when I worked for the president's office, people didn't believe in data. Everything was uh-huh. anecdotal. I think being able to have, like, real yeah. data to tell you and predict where things are going to happen makes absolute
it's
sense.
Helpful,
well, you didn't
for
have
sure.
computers. I mean, they were working off of, like, these things that where they're playing Pong on them, you know. I mean, it was like a TV hooked up to a keyboard, and you're like, I don't know how the hell this thing works. So, uh-huh. All right, well, Kim, what's your website?
It's KimFox.com. And Fox has two X's.
Two X's. Like Jamie Foxx.
And like Red Foxx.
And like Red Foxx.
Our older listeners.
Yes.
Any relation?
Yes.
No relation. No relation. Right.
Red Foxx was a trip. A hoot. He was the original. Everybody wants to talk about uh-huh. other comedians, but you look out for Red Foxx. Right. He was in a sitcom, but oh my. Yeah. You ever got that before and after record when he put out the After Midnight Show? Uh-huh. Oh my God. Dirtiest comic yeah. in the history of comedians.
And Jamie Foxx is
with
a hero.
That, we'll remember Kim Foxx.
Yeah. So right. That's what I'm trying. Yeah, Kim Foxx. All right,
you.
Kim Foxx. All right. Thank
Thanks,
you, Kim. Appreciate you being here.